Okay, Sefer Musar Avicha, this is our third session. It is Chai Adar, 18th of Adar, 12th of March. And last time we had learned through the entire first part of Parak Aleph, on page Chof Gimel 23. Just to review, 2 weeks ago we did the introduction, but to review this first part, Rav Kook presented ideas that are almost contradictory, almost antithetical. The first idea that he spoke about was that he really expands upon and actually brought the Mesilas Yesharim. And today the Mesilas Yesharim is the most classic Musar Sefer. And what the Mesilas Yesharim of Moshe Chaim Lutzata writes in his introduction is, I'm not really writing new ideas. These ideas are well known, but the more well known and obvious they are, the more they are elusive. Rav Kook elaborates on that concept. And the truth is, I believe he's explaining what the Mesilas Yesharim means. If you read the Mesilas Yesharim carefully, he says that when it comes to Chochmah of Musar, we can know the terms and not know what we're talking about. In contradistinction to other sciences, where if you can't fool yourself and think you know it if you don't. If I'm able to explain a mathematical or scientific concept, I know what it is, per se. But, where did cacophony?
It's the trash. The recycling.
Yeah.
It's the trash.
It's a lot of things at once.
Oh.
But when it comes to chovos halvavos, what we call the duties of the heart, musar, one can know the words and say the words and even make sense, but not really know what we're referring to. It requires study. Then he says, it's almost on the other hand, and the truth is I haven't quite gotten my head around the phraseology he uses. On page Chof Bey is the beginning of the paragraph, the first full paragraph there. It says, Omnam tochen hadavar masha shemos ha'elam mitzar atzma hem gluyim. However, tochen adavar means the inside of the thing, the contents, the core of the matter, why these terms are well known, is natural. I think he means, on the other hand, there's a natural reason and a good reason why we do relate readily to the terms we use in Musar. And that's the very important and beautiful idea that he developed, and his son refers us in the footnote on page Chof Gimel to the writings of the Dibna Magid. It talks about the same theme, that the midos are given to a person innately, and he has them from his earliest development, even though that causes man to use them incorrectly. He loves things that shouldn't be loved, he eschews things that shouldn't be eschewed, and all of the other midos. So you might think it would have been better not to have them initially, misuse them, and have to be redirected. But Rav Kook explained it's not so. It's very important to have them innately, because anything that isn't innate, you can't really hold on to. Here's a phrase somewhere here, hamikra lo yasmit, something that's only incidental. And mikra means something that happens to you, but it's not you, doesn't last. We need midos that last. So he says we're therefore created with our midos as part of us, so that they can be a true acquisition, a true kinyan in the soul of a person. The only thing is that initially they're used incorrectly. That was the Dibna Magid's mashal that his son referred to, that it's like the merchants who find jewels and they sew them onto inexpensive sacks and so on, even though it looks silly. You're sewing a diamond onto little leather case, but he does that until he brings it home, and then he affixes it to a crown. He affixes it where it really belongs. But if he wouldn't sew it onto something, it would get lost. So too, Hashem gives us midos that in early life we use incorrectly. But if we wouldn't practice it at all, if a person would have to discover ahava, I'd have to discover what love is, what yira is, and what chesed, what all these things are, when he's omed al data, when he's already mature in his thinking, it would be too far from him to even get them at all. So therefore, we sort of rehearse them. We use the midos when we're not really using them fully correctly. We're attaching them to the wrong things, but at least that's the way we hold on to them, which is a beautiful mashal, and it's an important way of thinking about the midos. So Rav Kook says, so on the other hand, the midos are natural to us. you don't have to study a lot to know what love is, to know what fear is, to know what reverence is, to know what empathy is, and so on. We do relate to the Midos readily. Now, on page Chaf Gimel, I think someone had asked last week that the wording wasn't clear. So maybe let's review from there. On page Chaf Gimel, in fact, let's go from the third line, where he says, Im kein harei efshar sheyikavu eila hamidas al hamatzav she'eino tivon harishon. If so, it's impossible to establish these midos in a setup, in a circumstance that isn't their first nature, be'emtzoim shelohayu maspikim af le'tivon harishon, with media, with means that wouldn't have worked for their first nature. What he's talking about is das. Rav Kook explained, what makes our midos develop is das, is understanding. We naturally have the ability to become angry. We naturally have the ability to want to draw near. But as he illustrated it, but a baby doesn't broadcast these midos. Why? Subtle reference, yeah.
Yeah, Mazel Tov.
Mazel Tov.
This was not even rehearsed. Not even rehearsed.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, and I can attest to it. It is true. Babies do not manifest all of those latent midos that they have because they have no das to apply them with. He doesn't know what to become irate over and what to become happy over because he doesn't know anything. The more our understanding grows, the more our midos are implemented. So says Rav Kook, even in a natural, un-Torah-trained world, what makes midos come out is das. So he says, so the Torah works it the same way. What will make the midos applied properly is the development of das. So as he said before, we're not really, when we talk about developing midos, we're not really developing midos. We're developing das to thereby align the midos to where they're supposed to be. The study of Musar is really the study of das. A person knows how to get angry. A person knows how to express ahava. The Musar is to teach him to have a proper and fully developed perspective. And it's not only an intellectual thing, it's a feeling of when which mida should be exercised. Now, that's why he had a line back on page Chaf Beis that says these terms in the middle of that paragraph. Im kein hashemus be'etzem einam be'etzem inyan hachachma drushalem umikom makam einam davar zulasa. These names are not really the chachma, but they're also not something separate from it. In other words, knowing what midos are is not really what we're after, but it's not entirely not that either. It's not the study of midos; it's the study of applying the midos. So I'm sorry to jump around. I'm just trying to recap what we did last week. So what he's saying on page Chaf Gimel is the same way. The only thing that makes our midos function is das, and that's the way it is in the natural world. So too, what makes our midos properly Torah developed is das. It can't be anything else. So the midos have to be something innate, and they have to be something that naturally responds to das. If the Torah were asking us to change ourselves in some radical way that's unnatural, and it's not the way midos would normally be developed, that won't work. It won't last. So that we read last week. So, in fact, let's read from the second paragraph on Chaf Gimel, and then we'll go straight. Ochein. Mashaman, indeed, what we said, Shahamidos kishahein nekvaos kulan l'inyan ha'avodah ha'alokis, that when midos are developed for the service of Hashem, for godly service, shahein shalo al pitivon harishon. So we just said that when you train midos into the service of Hashem, that's not their first nature. That's not the way they are naturally. A person naturally loves things that are not the service of Hashem. He has to be retrained to have Ahavas Hashem. A person might fear things that are not what should be feared. I mean, a perfect example of this would be, and again, I'm going to make an infantile reference to make Bobby Feldman happy, but they talk about the sense of bitachon. Psychologists talk about that a baby needs a sense of bitachon. It needs security and safety. And a baby finds security in its mother and its parents. The Chosal Lovos even talks about this.
Later, he grows up and realizes that that's not the source of bitachon. The parent is also vulnerable, but it's not healthy. Baby is supposed to feel secure. We get a little older and we have das, we realize that's not the source of security. And security comes from elsewhere. So bitachon was initially placed in where a human being naturally wants to feel a sense of security, resting in something, putting full faith in something. We get a little older and we shift it. We realize it's not from any human being, it's the Almighty. That's where security comes from. So you could argue that bitachon is first misplaced. Your natural bitachon is false, and it has to be redirected to be made correct. So Rav Kook clarifies, he says, and that's just an example, the same is true of all midos. This idea that the midos are first incorrect, it's not their first nature is not the correct nature. Second line of the second paragraph on Chav Gimel, Ein zeh ki im mitzad haguf. That is only when you look at things from the body, from the material. Dehainu, that is, she'etzem hamidos vadai pe'ulos hanefesh hein. The reason why I said it's only from the perspective of the body, and we started to read this last time, is because really the midos are functions of the soul. We might not think of it that way, but that's the truth. Really, they are functions of the soul. Ela shehapu'ula dveika b'chlei haguf. But the function clings to, if you want to put it in terminology, we relate to it's like running through the machine of the body, umishtane inyona lefi haguf hapoel. And its inyan, its nature changes per the machine that it's running through. Okay, if you have...
Well, even more basic, I mean, to go back to the infant, like the infant first thinks that it's the milk, but like on the physical nature, you know, the first nature right. is that the milk or the sustenance itself is the security, and then transfers right. that initially that, right. to the parent, and then...
Right, in fact, the Chovos HaLevavos goes through that, about how a human being first sees security here, and then here, physical, and then here,
yeah,
and then he's supposed to trace it back and back and back, and then realize it comes from... the highest source. What he's saying here, though, is that just like, you know, if you have, I don't know, again, to use contemporary examples, you have some kind of a file, but you're running it on a slow computer, so it looks like the file is a poor quality, but it's not really the movie or whatever it is you're watching, it's the machine that it's running on. So midos are a higher level entity. They're really functions of the neshama. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts us down in this world, and so the neshama is inextricably connected to a body, and it runs through it. And when it runs by way of the body, that shidduch confines and limits and reduces the neshama somewhat, and it limits the midah somewhat. So umitzad kochas haguf, and from the side, the perspective of the faculties of the body, hakodmim bizman, which come earlier. Now he means come earlier than when we're mature enough to redirect them to where they should be. Huchru hamidos ki'inyan teva rishon. The midos are swayed in a way that looks like first nature, l'dvarim gufaniim, for physical things. I like food, I like leisure, I like this, I like that, all the things. It looks like our midos have attached themselves to things that are not so good, that are suboptimal, and it looks like that's their first nature. It looks like teva rishon. Ledvarim gufanim umedumim, and imagine delusional things, she'enam al pi amitas ha-seichel, that according to the truth of seichel, what real seichel will tell you is that's not what you should feel ahava for, that's not what you should feel yira of, that's not what you should feel yearning for, and so on. Aval mitzad ha-nefesh, but from the angle of the soul, Vadai tivan harishon hu letachlis hamala. It's not really their first nature. It looks like first nature to you because you're starting the story from birth, once again. But that's not when your midos were born. The midos were born before that. Well, the Sefer Kabbalah talk about how the midos are really functions of the midos that Hashem put in the world, the sviros, and those go into human makeup. So it's just from the body, it looks like, well, the first av I ever felt was for custard donuts. So, yeah. But that was really second. That wasn't first. It's just the first one that you remember.
Hashinui shemeshana osan ha'odam miteva hanaros. The change that a person changes them, he changes his midos from the nature of youth, of immaturity. Eino shinui atzmi is not an inherent change. It's not a real change. Ki im hashava l'tivon harishon. Rather, it is reverting them back to their first nature. It's not true that our midos first nature was for the wrong things. That was really the second nature. It feels like the first because we don't remember. We think we don't remember the first nature. But the real, true nature of the midos is for the right things. That's what he says. Hashava, it's a return. L'tivon harishon. They're going back home. You're not taking them away from where they naturally want to be. People talk about, you know, observing the Torah. It's unnatural. It just feels that way because we've been led to think that the second was the first, but now you're really bringing it back to its original source. Asher al kain, that because of this yitachen shiyu kavuos kafi hamala, and that is why they can be established, permanently affixed, per the higher level. Again, because if my nature is to be lowly and to attach my midos to the wrong things, and the Torah is seeking for me, asking of me to ascend to heights that are unnatural, that would not last. That could not last. But what he's saying is, no, this is natural, and to the contrary, the body corrupted it, and it's just going back to the way it wants to be.
Similar in a way to how, in history, the idea that belief in God in monotheism came first, actually, and idolatry came second.
Right. At the macro level. True, also the world knows where it wants to be, and it's going back to where it should be. It's not. That's why it's very upsetting when people present Torah as a cult or as something new. You're new. We're not new. This is old. So, I mean, when I say you, I mean the people who are saying that are new. So, kafi shehi atzmi islan, because that when you say something is atzmi, it means it's inherent. Atzim is the bone, it's the core of something. Atzmi is me. That's its inherent way of being. Vim lo hayu mitzad atzman kach, hayeze yitzia migidron b'toras mikra. If it were not so, if they were not by their very nature so, this would be a yitzia migidron. That would mean you're taking them out of their natural boundaries. B'toras mikra. A mikra means an incident. It means something that happens to you, but it's not you. I was walking down the street and poof, something happened, but that's not my natural state of being. So if we would be demanding of the midos to go outside of their normal gedarim, do something out of the ordinary, do something that's bizarre, bizarre things don't last. Things that are mikra don't last. Rav Kook is saying this, and really, as many who've written about Rav Kook have said, a lot of what he's writing in Nigla and revealed terminology is really Kabbalah. The Kabbalah talks about this. The midos are the inherent state of being. They're divinely given. They're reductions of the midos that Hashem manifests in the world and the spheros. That is man's natural state of being. And therefore, when we align ourselves, align our midos the way they're supposed to be, we're bringing them back to what is natural. Because otherwise it would be mikra, it would just be an incident, it would be something unnatural. V'hamikra lo yasmin, there's that phrase, something that's just a mikra, that's just by chance it happened, but that can't last. The midos are supposed to last. When the Sfarim talk about dveikus, clinging to Hashem, it's that a person has achieved these midos and they're natural to him. You study Tanakh, you'll see in many places the Farshim elaborate how great people naturally intuited and sensed what is right. When David HaMelech wants to build the Beis HaMikdash and he asks Nassan, should I do it? Nassan says, you can trust your instinct. In that particular instance, he was later told not to. But you can trust your instinct. What you feel like doing because of your level is what's meant to be. Then he gets a prophecy that he shouldn't for various reasons. But the idea of Dveikus is that we fix our midos to the degree that they are naturally so. Not that we're constantly challenging them and re-steering them, and so it's supposed to be natural. Turning to Chaf Dalet, v'hine. So lefi zeh ha-emes, the truth is, according to this, she'inyane ha-emes charusim banu b'tiveinu. Matters of truth are, charus means carved into us in our nature. V'nafshenu lositen lamanoach, and our souls can't give themselves peace. Our soul will not give peace.
parentheses, imlo naval belo sabi adayim, but unless we actively confuse it and distort it, betirdos mutaros omagunos shema afilos ora. Betirdos, tirda can mean a bother, but it's anything that thoroughly distracts you. A person says, I'm very tarud now, it means I'm not at ease, I can't focus. So tirdos are any things that just distract you and make you unable to focus on what's important. So he says, it's in the parentheses, he uses two terms. He says, tirdos mutaros o magunos. It can either be permissible, tirdos. Like the Ramban writes about famously in Parshas Kedoshim, a person can be doing everything that's not against the Torah, but he's so caught up in things that are maybe permissible, but they're indulgent, that he's not able to focus on anything important. So you can have tirdos that are permissible. Oh, magunos, or maguna means it's really despicable. Shema filos, or that could be forbidden things that darken the light. The soul naturally wants to get back to its natural state of being, and it will naturally long to do that unless one actively corrupts it. If he's so steeped in other things that he can't see anything clear, sometimes if people are so caught up in things, they can't have a clear thought in their lives, God forbid. So unless a person is mavalbel, he confuses his neshama with distractions that cast darkness on it. Although, if he doesn't do that, the neshama naturally longs to be at ease. It will have no peace ad shetamod al tiva hamiti, until it's able to get back to its natural state of being. To be omed means to stand in the proper place, to stand in its natural state of being. Dehainu sheyiu kol midos seha misham shos la'avodos Hashem Yisbaruch, and that is that all of its midos should be in service to serve Hashem. The neshama is naturally longing for that. The same way I quoted for you a week or two ago from his sitter, how he says the neshama is always davening, and it's longing to daven. We can't daven all day. We have other things to do. But when you're actually davening, now your neshama says, that's what I've been waiting for. So now that everything is synchronized. The same is true with the midos. The neshama is yearning. The neshama doesn't have so much interest in, you know what I went shopping for today, or this. The neshama is waiting for the midos to be realigned where they're supposed to be. Yeah, that's all that it's longing for. Lefizeh, and according to this, based on this, hamatzim einav, one who closes his eyes, mehashkif, from gazing, be iuno, with his analysis. Iun is from the word ayin. It means to look, but it means to look strongly. Alin yone hayira, probably should read v'ha avoda, on matters of fear of God and service of God. Hu chomes nafsho ma'od. He is extorting his soul. He's tying his soul up in handcuffs for the tape over its mouth, and the soul is suffering.
Excuse me, Rabbi. Yes. So is the challenge then, am I understanding this correctly? So while you are, the example you gave is shopping. Well, then the neshama, ideally, if you're thinking along these more appropriate lines, the neshama should be as fully engaged as possible while you're doing that, so that your daily life activities are infused with this, no? Is that the challenge, or am I missing something here?
The Bali Musa talk about that. On the one hand, I just presented as if the neshama only wants the spiritual things, and the material things are therefore like constricting. The Bali Musa explained to us, though, that but that could beg a question. So why did Hashem incarcerate the neshama in this body if it's such torture? The answer is there are ways of doing all of those mundane things in such a way that it is not constricting for the neshama. Rabbi Yisrael Salanti used to like to quote a statement of our sages of Chazal. It's actually about Chanoch, one of the biblical characters, Chanoch, that he was a shoemaker, but with every stitch of his shoemaking, he made great tikkunim in the olamas. There are different ways of understanding it, but the simple meaning of what Rabbi Yisrael said is that if a person does what he's supposed to do properly and correctly in the playing field, which is this world, Olam Hazeh, but when he says good morning to somebody, it's a wholehearted good morning. At any moment, whatever Avodas Hashem calls of me, it could be a grand thing, it could be a small thing. More often than not, it's small, but he does it correctly, and I'm not steeped in the material. The material are a vehicle for the spiritual. That's the playing field Hashem put us in. Then the neshama is not constricted. Then everything becomes a vehicle toward the spiritual.
So then the challenge is to acquire enough da'at to be able to merge the two in daily living.
Right, that's well said.
So that is I'm on your wavelength.
Yeah,
thank you.
Well, I'm just trying to be on Rav Cook's wavelength. Yeah, a lot of this requires a lot of thought, but yeah. And, you know, we can only do one thing at a time also. But yeah, certainly, whenever we talk about the spiritual and the physical being so at odds to the Devida, when you say the bracha mafli lasos and ashiyata, it means it's a wonder because how can two such antithetical things have a shidduch? But Hashem knew what He was doing. there is an answer to that, but it takes, as you say, it takes das to know how to do it properly. But a person who just pursues the material and he closes his eyes from all of his neshama's yearning, is, as he just said, extorting his soul. Shemoneya mimena, he's withholding from it, tiv amamish, literally its nature. Right, but getting into the season of Pesach, one of the things Paro did is he gave each person work that didn't fit. He gave the men women's work, the women men work. Children had to do work that wasn't it. When people have to do it's not what they want to do, not what they naturally want, it's afflicting. And this is much more so because the difference between neshama and guf is a much greater chasm. So he's holding back its nature. Kisoger ein of meraos, that's like closing your eyes from seeing. Imagine a person, you force him to keep his eyes closed when he wants to see. Otem tumid uzno mishmo, or constantly closing his ears from hearing. Now, Rav Cook is very careful with his wording. You'll notice when he spoke about eyes, he said closing his eyes. And when he spoke about ears, he said stopping up his ears permanently, constantly, tumid. He threw in the word tumid. So his son, or Tzvi Yehuda in the footnote, picks up on that. And he says in footnote Gimel, La'ayin, for the eye, skira kol shehi, he built itivis. For the eye, any forced closing is unnatural. La'ozen ha'atima tamid, but for the ear, it's constant closing. And he tells you to look at the Gemara and Ksuba. The Gemara and Ksuba is a famous thing. Oh. What is this little thing for? So, whether it means literally or figuratively, but so when a person is speaking Lashon Hara, we have built-in...
Earplugs,
right. So the ear sometimes is better off not hearing. The eye is supposed to be always available to be able to see. The ear actually sometimes is better off closed up. So the son is explained, that's why his father, it's not so relevant to our discussion here because he's just using it as a mushel, but that's when he spoke about the eye, he said it's like closing the eye or constantly closing the ear. Because for the ear, a little bit of closing is not so bad anyway. What's interesting to me is that there's some who almost say it the opposite way. The Maharal, somewhere in his writings, I don't recall where, says that the eye has a lid, but the ear never naturally closes. It's almost the opposite idea. Mm-hmm. He said, because the eye, a person goes to sleep, his eyes are closed, but his ears are still open. Here's a sound, he wakes up. He's not going to see anything, though. He says the other way, that the ear is always supposed to be open, that that's more inherent to man's nature. So I'm not sure if that's a contradiction or not, or machlokas or not, but again, it's all somewhat ancillary to what he's saying here. You're just using that as a mushel, but the same, what it would be to close the eye so much wants to see, there's so much color and beauty and there's words and there's wisdom and everything that the eye can take in, or all the things that the auditory sense can take in, and you close it, you don't allow it to be used when a person wants to use it. That's what it is when a person doesn't pursue what the neshama wants. Literally. It's literally the same thing. The same way the eye has functionality, the neshama has functionality, and a person who just pursues the mundane and the material and the physical, he's, the neshama is this whole faculty that's just being cut off. Ad shelo yishtamish klal b'chush me'achushim, so you don't, it's like you don't allow him to use any of his faculties. V'kal v'chomel l'chol hachushim kulam, or how much more so you don't allow a human being to use all of his faculties. Ish kozeh vaday b'chashecha yishalech, a person like this is certainly going in darkness, k'moshe amar ha-kosev, derech rishoyim ka'afela, the ways of the evildoers is like darkness. It's, they're going in darkness, there's so much out there that they are meant to do and they're not doing, it's like starving off a whole area of faculties of a creature. Okay, that's Os Aleph. Let's go on to Beis. Limud Hayira v'chachmasa, the study of Yira, of fear of Hashem, and the wisdom involved in it, and its chachma. He says, Nired appears shemitzvahs Hayira kolelos kol halimudim hamavim liras Hashem. The mitzvah of the fear of God includes all studies that bring to fear of God, which is That's a lot. There are many things that need to be studied to fear Hashem. Yiras Hashem, the mitzvah to fear Hashem, Hashem Elokecha Tira, it's a mitzvah natari, you shall fear Hashem your God, includes everything that leads to that. Keep that in mind. Now, Amru Chazal, our sages say, it's a Gemara in the second parak of Masechet Shabbos, Al Pasuk. There's a Pasuk in Eov that says, Hein Yiras Hashem Chachma, Vesur Meira Bina. Hein usually means behold. We'll see in a second. Chazal have a deeper meaning for it. But Hein is like Hine, behold. Behold, Yiras Hashem Chachma. The fear of God is wisdom. Vesur Meira, the end of the Pasuk is, and turning away from bad, Bina, is understanding. Pasuk in Eov. So our sages say, Hein Achas. There are many levels of interpretation. There's simple pshat, and then there are deeper meanings. And just teaching, actually, in the girls' high school here, that the Rishonim tell us the main lessons of the Torah are the deeper meanings. To the degree, the Rashbam writes in Parshas Vayeshev, that the early ones didn't even work on pshat at all. He says, I'm going to write a commentary based on pshat, because my grandfather and the others, because of their righteousness, they focused on the deeper meanings more, but there's been very little written on basic pshat. And Rashi in many places tell you the deeper meaning is like this and like this and like this. But by the way, it also has a simple meaning. But it also is because the deeper meanings are always more important. Pshat has its place. So when our sages, in the Gemara, most often when they interpret a pasuk, it's not the simple meaning of the pasuk, it's a deeper meaning. So Chazal say, Hein, again, Hein certainly at a simple level, it means like Hine, behold. Behold, Yiras Hashem is Chachma. But in the Gemara, it says, Hein, Achas. The word Hein can also mean one. Chazal say, because in Greek, in Yevani, Hein means one. So in this pasuk, Hein means one. And Chazal explained, Shirak hi levada chachma. There's one thing that is chachma. You know what it is? Yiras Hashem. Now that's an astounding statement that needs a lot of explanation, which is what Rav Kook is going to address here. What in the world does that mean? Does anybody here train in any other area that involves some wisdom? They might think that probably most people here spent hours and hours, and maybe years and years training in other things. Hashem made a world that has a lot of wisdom in it. The wisdom in any entity, you could spend endless time studying one atom. What does it mean? Yiras Hashem is Chachma. Nothing, there's nothing else in the world that is Chachma. So what does that mean? So Ukamosha Kasa Bahakdamas Mesilas Yesharim, as is written in the introduction to the Mesilas Yesharim, which I marked off the place here, in his introduction, he writes, I'm reading from the Mesilas Yesharim now, V'hine ha-kosev omer, hein yiras Hashem hi chachma. The pasuk says, hein, one, yiras Hashem hi chachma, it is chachma. V'amar Rabbi Sene Zachron Vracha, hein achas. One thing, harei shehayira hi chachma, v'hi levada chachma. Fear of God is chachma, and he alone. And the reason why he quotes that is to say that chachma has to mean something that requires analysis. Many of the Musar Sfarim are bemoaning the fact that people think intelligent people study complicated things in the Talmud and other things, and you know, the guy Nebuchy doesn't have much upstairs, so he can study Musar. So Shlomo's trying to tell you it's not so. It wouldn't be called Chachma if it didn't require great analysis. But Rav Kook is asking the question, but what do you mean that it alone, only Yiras Hashem, that alone is Chachma? V'davar zeh yipaleh ma'od. This thing is a great wonder. It's very difficult to understand. Hallo geder ha-chachma hu masha tzarech iyun. The definition of chachma is something that requires analysis. You know, reading something, it's easy to be reading the newspaper, it's very easy. That's not chachma. You're reading something that requires analysis. You have to think, how does this work? And you ask a question, you give an answer. Something that requires analysis is chachma. V'harbe dvarim zulos limudei ha-yirat tzrichim iyun. Are there not many things aside from Yiras Hashem that require iyun, they require analysis? There's so many areas of study. Yet our sages say there's one thing that's chachma, Yiras Hashem. Asks Rav Kook, what does that mean? V'hanira bazeh. So this is Rav Kook's derech, his way of explaining this, of understanding this. Shekol halimudim, all other studies. K'she'echad ma'ayen bohem, when one studies them. V'totz'os ha'iyunim yimser l'chaveru bekitzer. And the results of his studies he gives over to his friend in short. Okay, I relate most to the world of Torah study, so I'll, because that's what I spend most of my time on, Baruch Hashem, and so I'll start from there. So Rav Aaron Cutler is studying a piece of Gemara and a Rambam and a Rashba and a Ran, and it's all very difficult, and there's this question and that question, the other question, and he, with all of his great Torah genius, spent hours and hours and hours and came to realize that, no, you're misunderstanding it. It works like this. Now look at what the Rambam said. Now look at the Gemara. That's what the Rashba meant. Now you understand the Ran. So he, with his great genius and his hours and hours of toil, came to a new understanding, and he can show it to me. He writes it down. Now I read the piece. Oh, that was a good question. Now I see the answer. Very good. So it took, you know, his 20 hours of genius would be, you know, 20,000, you know, someone else. So we have 20,000 Torah genius hours that went into it, but you can write it down in 5 pages, and there you go. So one person was involved in great iyun, great analysis, but he can give it over to someone else, bekitzer in short, or lahavdil in some area of science, you know, tie the key to the kite, and electricity, and how does it work, and or a computer, right? You take out a piece of technology, and you can give over to the next generation how it works, but the person who discovered it and developed it, there was so much that went into it. But when you give it over in short, mekabel chaveru sachochma kemoshim mi shehoga biyunos man rav. You tell me how it works, you tell me what you've discovered. It took you a long time to conclude that, and you may have had a lot of trial and error and other things, but now when you give it over to me, so I know it like you do. If you give it over to me fully, it took a lot less time for me to learn it than for you, but now I know what you know. And he says, you can even so in Torah, kamo in yani halacha, like in matters of halacha, shebemakom shenafal safek mitzad stiras asugyos, where there's a doubt, a lack of clarity because of stiras sugyos, because a contradiction in different pieces in Gemara. That's what happens all the time. Here it seems to say like this, here it seems to say like that. So how does it work? Or how do we reconcile the two? O kushyos, or difficulties, hanoflos bedivri ha-talmud ha-poskim, difficulties that come up in the Gemara or the poskim, tzarech shkida, you need toil, the iyun, an analysis, lahamid davar alburya, to put something on it, to set things up straight. Sometimes we have, to everyone else it looks like a contradiction. One of the great chacham says, no, it isn't. It's really two different categories. Look, I'll show you when he shows you how it fits in. Aval acharei habira, but after the clarification, kishiyomer oso le'eza odom bekitzer, when you tell it over to someone else in short, yeida hashomei oso kamo mishahaga v'iyun v'chidish ba'atzma. The listener, again, if he tells it over fully and he listens carefully, he knows it like the one who innovated, like the one who had to work so hard to understand it. Masha'in kein yiras Hashem, which is not the case for one science, fear of God, which is not the case for yiras Hashem. Sha'afal pi, and I believe this is an elaboration of what we were really learning the last time. Sha'afal pi shelimud hayira shavah l'shar limudim, even though study of fear of God is equivalent to other studies. B'sidur klolim v'chukim, and that you have to organize principles and laws. It works like this. This is what you do. This is not what you do. This is how we're supposed to be. It's like a science. Hamodiyim lanu gedulas yotzreinu yisparach yisrael, that tells us about the greatness of Hashem and everything that follows from that. V'yeshna makomos v'nyanam hadarshim libun ubira, and there are places and subjects that require clarification. Liban means to make something white, to make it clear. Ubir and clarification. It's like any other science. There are difficult parts. You have to study. You have to think about it. Mikol makom. However, gam acharei habirur. Nevertheless, even after the clarification, I had it difficult. I was trying to understand how it works, how you fear Hashem, how you properly serve, whatever area of study of yours Hashem. But even after all of that, kishiyomar kitzer hadvarim, when he will tell over his conclusions, the abridged, the summary of what he learned, lemish lo yarad la omek ha'inyanim, to somebody who didn't plumb the depths, go down to the depths of the matter, lo yavin, he will not understand. Mm-hmm. He's going to say, this is why yiras Hashem is chachma, because it's the only thing that necessarily is procured only through chachma.
So you have to struggle with each person individually.
Well said. Each person has to struggle with it individually. Other things, if someone else struggled a lot... Now, I want to clarify. In many other things, it's still beneficial to struggle. It's much better for me to study the piece of Gemara and try to understand, because that trains me. Maybe I'll work on it better. If you just spoon-feed it to me, I won't focus as much. I didn't listen to the question. But nevertheless, the bottom line is, though, that if some great chacham asked a question and gave an answer, and I read it, I'm reading this morning something from the Netziv, from this, so if I do it thoroughly, I know afterwards what he knows, what he knew, so to speak, in that area. In Yiras Hashem, if it's spoon-fed to me, I don't know it. Yiras Hashem, like Chava just said, one has to struggle with it himself or herself.
Rabbi,
yeah.
Are you saying that it's experiential, that you have to experience it? Because I can't just explain it, you actually have to experience it.
See, very good. That's why I just mentioned in passing that I think he's elaborating on what he wrote in the last piece. He said in his first piece, in the first parak, that we can know the words and not know what we're talking about. Oh, Yiras Hashem, Avas Hashem. And he said, I can use those terms and have even a superficial understanding, but it's what he called dibur chitzoni. It's external speaking. It's not the essence of the thing. I believe that he means this to be the explanation of that. Because unlike other things, if you say proton, neutron, electron, you know what you're talking about, especially if you study. But if you say Yiras Hashem, Avas Hashem, unless I struggled with it myself, unless I worked through the chacham myself, I don't really know what I'm talking about. That doesn't mean it's bad. It's a step toward it. I'm reading it, okay, but if I don't work on it myself, my understanding will remain on the surface and not the essence. I'm using a word and I don't really know what I'm talking about. He said language does not really, as you said, it's experiential. Experience can't be, you know, describe a feeling, describe the color red. It's something that you have to, it and only it is chachma, because unless I work through it in my das myself, I don't have it. You can explain it perfectly clearly to me, and I don't know. I cannot. And I can write down. I can say over what you told me, but I don't really know what you're talking about. I'm reminded of Zelig Epstein once spoke on Rabbi Ruchem Levovitz's yard site, and he said we experienced a phenomenal thing when we listened to the Mashkiach give his shmuzin. Ruchem Levovitz was the Mirror Mashkiach with the men. I'm now learning his works. He said when he first said an idea, it seemed strange. We didn't know what he meant. Then we would go over it and discuss it and work it out. And then it would be so clear that we don't understand what he said. Like, what did you tell me? Or, yeah, obviously. Like I can't even tell it over because it's obvious. But initially it was hard to understand. But then afterward it becomes such a part of you. Yeah, what did he say? He didn't really say anything. Yeah, obviously it is so. And he explained it based on the idea that Musa is like a candle. Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. The idea is not to give light to someone else, to transfer the light so he becomes his own candle, so it becomes a part of you. But I think it's the same thing. Initially, I didn't know what year is, but once one achieves what year as Hashem is, what Abba, so then what's there to explain? I mean, yeah, there's nothing to talk about here. That's nothing new. That's what we all relate to. At least you think that when you have it yourself. Yeah, I'm sorry. Somebody question?
Yeah. Yeah. So we're born with certain midos, right? And then we have a choice. That's what we said the first time. Now, Yira and Chachma, are we born with that? Or that's something that you have to...
Well, Hebrew defined for us, when we talk about what we have to train ourselves, it's not actually Yira, it's aligning the Yira to where it's supposed to be. I might have fear of things that I think are powerful in the world, but that's Avodah Zarah. What are you putting your... That's not where the source of power comes from. That task of realigning everything, what should I really love, what should I really fear, that what he's saying, the real most is really the development of Das. That development is not natural. The process, once you get it back to where it's supposed to be, then the Neshama says, ah, that's where I want it to be in the first place. But that process, that requires work. And I think that's what he's talking about here, to really know what real Yira is, what real Ava is, what these terms mean. We have to think about it and work it through ourselves. So I think that's why it explains what he was talking about here. And I think that really explains what he was talking about here. You'll recall the very first paragraph of this whole book was every person who develops Das, he says, should really write ideas of Musar for themselves. Why? Because that's what Musar is. Musar, as Chava put it, is the personal struggle with it. So it's not enough for me to read what the great chacham, I have to do that too, but once it's been processed through my own kalim, through my own vessels, so then I have to say what it means to me. Yeah.
Do you just define it, like when they say Yiras Hashem, is that includes Ahavas Hashem? And, like, what is it?
The truth is, it's a semantic matter. Sometimes when they say Yir, they mean everything. everything in Musar, and sometimes I mean Yira as opposed to Ava, as opposed to Rachamim, as opposed to... So I was using that as an example, really. But for us to really know what Yiras Hashem is, it's a term I can throw around, but what does it really? I have to study and think about it and feel it. You read sometimes the writings of great Chachamim, and I read a Malvim or a Netziv, and on a Pasuk, and they start saying, and it means like this, and it means like that, or how do you read Arizal? Where did you see that? You know, the answer is he sees it, he feels it, he knows what he's talking about. We are not there yet, but he can elaborate and say, this pasuk really means like this and like this, and they're describing what the meat is. Where did you see that? I didn't see that in the Gemara. But when you study it fully and you work on it, then they know what it is. So that's what he's saying. Every midah needs to be worked on. That's why Yiras Hashem, and here Yiras Hashem in the pasuk is the broader definition, I believe. It means the Yira and everything that comes under the rubric of Yiras Hashem.
But is it practically, though, is it talking about understanding Hashem's ways, or is it literally fearing Hashem? Is it the relationship?
It's a man's proper, let's say man's proper relationship with Hashem and all that goes into that. Which doesn't just mean intellectual recognition, it means a feeling too.
But I'm just trying to understand it, but a person, a Baal Tshuva who never learned about Hashem and then goes to a yeshiva and learns about Hashem, like, they are getting the teachers studying and toiling over it. They are, internalizing it. That's how they
become from. Well, everything that we do in the study of Hashem is coming from someone. I'm reading someone else's work. But if he just asks a question and gives an answer, if I don't work it through, it requires personal work, not just saying over. What he's saying is, theoretically, if all of the science were revealed and someone who worked hard to reveal it, just told it over to me, I would know it like he does. But Yiras Hashem necessarily requires work, requires thinking and searching and so on. But of course, but what are the vehicles of doing that? Are the Svarim, but then I have to think about what they say. Okay. Yeah, Mesillas Yesharim says like this. All right, that's good. Can't just say it over. Which is a commentary on why this requires so much work, because he says, Mesillas Yesharim writes in the beginning, you got to read this many times. Obviously, if I have to read it many times, it's not just to be able to say over what he says. If I have a good memory, I read it once, I can tell you what he says. But I have to read it many times because it's internalizing. That's why he said the chachma is something that you have to analyze yourself. That's what he's saying.
On one level, is it like the Torah itself, and they forget the exact Hebrew, but that it's written in the language that a person understands. But it's far more than the letters in the scroll.
Right.
It's not the Torah that's written. It's so much more. But that's the only way we can receive it.
Right.
Same too with this. Don't be fooled by language.
Right. Right. Very well said. So language is tzimtzum. The Kabbalah talks about that the Torah is white fire with black fire written on top of it. The black fire are the letters. But the white, the parchment, is actually holier because the letters are limiting. You can't tell somebody infinity. You have to tell them a concept. Honor your father and your mother. Okay, good. How does that work? But it's meant to extrapolate to more and more. So the more we see in the words, the closer we are to understanding the vastness of the Torah, right? But everything, we are finite. We can only process one thing at a time. We can only process limited things. So it's presented to us in a limited way. The greater the person, the more he sees. I mentioned last time, Yisrael Salanter said to somebody, maybe in your Gemara it doesn't say that, but in my Gemara it's explicit. Because he understood the meaning behind it. All right, exactly. And that's what he means here also. And he writes, Va'ed al zeh, the proof to this, Mashaheyed lanu ha-chassid Ramosha Chaim Litzato, again the same author, but not in this sefer. The Sifro Pischei Chachma V'Das. This is his most readable sefer, and Derech Hashem also somewhat, but he has many Kabbalists. In fact, I think they have in the back an introduction to that sefer. But in that sefer, Shitzarech L'Das Shorish HaChachma Unekudas Almatasovu. You have to know the source of the Chachma and the point on which it revolves. You can give over the core of something, but you can't really understand it unless you've studied it yourself.
Kirak oz yoven chashivus hasharis. The only way to really understand the importance of the source. So, lahavdil, sometimes people wonder, what's the halacha? So if you want to know practically, I'm in my kitchen, I want to just kosher tray. If you don't want the whole background, oh, there's a Gemara and Chulin like this, but in Avodah Zarah it sounds like that. So there's somebody showing himself like this, and the Tazar. You don't want that. I want to know, is it, do I have to kosher it or not? So the same thing with some matters of Yiras Hashem. There's the bottom line, what I should do in a given instance, but then there's the source and the source of the source of it. So the Rav Moshe Chaim Letzatos says you have to really know the source of it, and that you can only do if you study it. You could tell somebody in short where it's coming from, but he won't appreciate it. Lochein vaday, therefore, certainly, rak yiras Hashem levada hi chachma. That's what the pasuk means, and that's what Chazal means, that only yiras Hashem is chachma. Chachma amitis, true chachma, shelo tishtan aliyos yidiyah ba'alma below chachma. That is not knowledge. Everything else, he says, is really knowledge. And he's going to say in a second that knowledge is not the same thing as chachma. Knowing facts is not chachma. Now, sometimes when the facts aren't clear, I have to use my chachma to figure out what the facts are. But theoretically, that didn't have to happen. If somebody would have worked it out for me and just told it over to me, you know, if Rav Aaron Cutler didn't explain that Gemara to me, then I have to go work it out myself. But theoretically, it could have just been given over to me. Yeah.
The Ata and Hakam are really different than each other.
Yeah, sometimes we use them interchangeably.
Right.
So here we're not getting so much into the...
I'm just trying
here we're not getting so much...
The really know is really in the whole the whole being knows it, not just in your head.
It could be. They're different. Yeah, here we're not getting so into the different terms. It's being in the Das, Tuna, yeah. But all the knowledge in the world, whether it be in deep halachos, which is a very holy thing, or you want to know the nature of the world, the nature of things that exist, lahavdil, mitzad atzmam, these areas of study inherently, by their very selves, einan ki im yediya, they're really just knowledge, not chachma. Really, the rest of the world is just knowledge.
So what's the definition of chachma?
Chachma is something that, he's saying that what we learn from this pasuk is that chachma means something that inherently requires analysis. Everything else, he's saying, it doesn't really inherently require analysis. If somebody could write up The Universe for Dummies, a big book, and it's all spelled out, so I could just read it. It would just be knowledge, and this is how this works, and this is how this works. The problem is sometimes some things aren't clear, so we have to go study to figure out how they work. Ah, eureka, I figured out how this thing works. But if it had been given over to me, that would suffice too. What he's saying is that what the Eov really means, what Chazal really means, is there's one thing where inherently it can only be acquired through Chachma. It is not knowledge. It is Chachma, that is Yiras Hashem. Let me just finish this line, which is what he says here. Ela sheyipol behen koshi basagas yediyasin. But what happens is that sometimes difficulty falls in understanding, in knowing them. Ad shen etzdarach l'shtayimesh gam behen v'kal chachma. It wasn't clear to me. How does this chemical work? How does this physical property work? So I had to use Chachma to figure out, to gain a yediyah, to gain knowledge. Which at its source was created in man really just for Yira. If Hashem created Chachma, the faculty to have Chachma in man, it was really there for a Yiras Hashem. Mm-hmm. We use it for other things when we have to. In fact, the Chovos Halvavos writes that the higher level of faculty is, the more it wants to be used for a higher level purpose. And he says when we use higher level faculties for lower purposes, they're not happy. So Rav Kook is giving me the basics of that is I'm using my chachma to figure out how I can make another dollar, but really my chachma would like to be used for Torah. It feels constricted. Rav Kook is giving me a whole new level that he's saying really all chachma, anytime I'm using powers of iyun for something that isn't ultimately for Yiras Hashem, those powers of iyun, of analysis, feel constricted because really everything else should just be knowledge. And only Yiras Hashem should be Chachma, which is a deep idea. I have to think about this for a few weeks. Yeah?
I'm trying to sort this out. So do both knowledge...
Ladies, I warned you that Rivka... And this is at least one of his readable stories. It's a deep idea. I think it helps us, but it takes a lot of processing. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm
trying to clarify. Do both knowledge and Chachma involve the integration and internalization of the material at hand being considered, or...
I think he's saying not.
Or is the Chokhmah more innate and becomes developed through the learning?
Well, he's using two terms, Yediyah and Chokhmah. Yediyah is knowing something.
So does knowing involve the
maybe in some case
and internalization, the struggle?
In some cases, yes. In some cases, no. You know, I can know if 5 plus 5 is 10. I don't have to internalize it, but I can know there's... an obligation to feel for my friend, and therefore I do internalize that. But he's saying anything that points in the direction of Yiras Hashem has to be worked on, requires Iyun. Other things can just be known. There may be cases where I didn't just know it because it wasn't taught to me, so I had to work at it, but they don't inherently have to be so. Yiras Hashem requires Iyun analysis. It requires the thought, yeah.
So I don't think I'm understanding properly, because I'm thinking about other examples in life. Like, you know, you can read every marriage book on the market, but until you live it and experience being married and, you know, toil with, you know, different things, like, you're not going to live Shalom Bayit, so, or child raising. You know, you can read all of the child raising books and the chinuch books.
I think he's talking at a much deeper level. Even in the world of yediyah, of knowledge, of course it is easier to study something if you apprentice. Go to medical school, we've got a lot of book knowledge, until he gets out there on the floor and he sees what you do, he doesn't really know what to do. I think Rav Kook would tell you that that's all still knowledge. We're not so sharp, so when I just read in a book, you know, be sensitive this way, until you get out there and you practice it, how to raise a child and so on. Of course, we learn better from experience, but he would say that's all still yediyah. That's not chachma. It's still knowledge. The better way to learn knowledge is hands-on many times. But I don't think he's not calling that chachma. Chachma is the deep analysis of really contemplating Hashem, which is why all the Musar Sfarim say it's so unfortunate that people will spend time just saying a pilpul on something in Gemara, on a theoretical case that will never come up in life, but the basic obligation of fearing Hashem, which is also Chachma, which is, that's what that line in Mesillas Yesharim was saying, that people don't work on because they think they know it because we know the words, but we don't know what it really means. He's talking about like real analysis. I think what you're distinguishing are two areas of yediyah. Book yediyah and hands-on yediyah, but he would call that all yediyah, right. I believe.
I think there's a tendency to read this and try to extrapolate that he's talking about like intellectual development in general, or how do we know things of the world, whereas he's actually specifically saying Yiras Hashem and the study, like we can read it and jump where you are, or sort of my developmental ideas, but I think he is specifically and outlining this particular kind of Chachma.
Or to put it in different ways, there may be things that we think are deep.
They're not. Yeah. Well,
in
other words, right.
I read in a book how to be nice to my wife. Then I learned how to really...
That's not
that's all.
Right.
Yiras Hashem is the plumbing the depths, is the real...
And he really is focusing on, you know, like your examples, like when he talks about study, unless he says sciences of the world, he really is looking at knowledge of Hashem.
Right, but I want to remind you, there's a reason why the first line of all of this was, it appears that Yiras Hashem includes all studies that bring to Yiras Hashem. So many things in Torah, when you're learning about what Purim is about and what Pesach is about.
But he's not saying culinary arts and all, because you could make the case that everything that you study, like the more you know.
Well, I think that's how we would divide it. That when you're using those other areas of study to say Ma Rabu Ma Asecha Hashem,
exactly,
there are Gemaras about, you know, that Hashem in His Chesed made things not only sustain us, but they have interesting textures and colors and tastes so that we enjoy it more. Ma Rabu Ma'asecha Hashem, how wondrous right. that is. When you're thinking that way and you're analyzing it and you're toiling on it and it brings you to Yiras Hashem, it is Yiras Hashem.
Right.
When I'm doing something that's just more pragmatic and practical, even if it's interesting and there's a lot of knowledge there, he's saying that's really just Yediyah.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that points in the direction of Yiras Hashem, there it necessarily requires work, and which is such an elaboration of the Mesilas Yesharim. The Mesilas Yesharim is trying to tell us, if we work hard thinking about everything else in life, but, oh, fear of God, that's for dummies. Yeah, of course you're supposed to be, you know. To the opposite. Hain, the only thing that does require study is Yiras Hashem. We're basically out of time, but he's going to say that the end of the pasuk, the next piece is Sur Meira. Sur Meira, Bina, and straying from bad, turning away from bad is Bina. Bina means understanding. He says exactly. It doesn't say not doing bad is Bina. Sur Meira means making it my nature to not do bad. Not that every time I say, oh, I would like to do that, but the Torah says no. That's not Sur Meira. That's not doing wrong. I wanted to, but I didn't. Sur Meira, where I align my midos as such that I wouldn't want to do it, Hashem doesn't want me to do it. It's I've aligned my traits with the will of Hashem. That requires Bina, because it's the same thing. I can read about it, but if I don't work on it and internalize it, it doesn't develop that way. So that's what we'll see next time in Mirtzah Hashem. Okay.
Thank you so much.